Arm's Length Reporting for investors who want the whole story. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in, Tom, for KER Politics. First couple of segments, you're going to be chatting with Jim McKinney. I got to ask you guys a question out there, and I'd like some comments on that. And that is, did you ever think things would get this crazy? Let's take out the word crazy, and let's be a little more specific. Let's say, did you ever think that things would get much more volatile or unpredictable than they are right now? Did you ever think that the president, the duly elected president of the United States of America, would be described using serious profanity by members of Congress? I don't think so. Did you ever think as soon as one of them, and by one of them I mean one of the Democrats, Tulsi Gabbard, started to gain strength, that they would turn against her because she wasn't quite progressive enough? After all, she is a war veteran, a military veteran, very bright woman, and a lot of people in that particular political ilk are turning against her. We're going to talk a little bit about what Trump has done for black people. Before we do that, though, and I have to give all credit to Jim for saying this, all this talk about banning assault weapons is just baloney. And I'll tell you why it's baloney. Because what the people are using are not actual, genuine assault weapons. They are simply automatic rifles. Jim, it doesn't get any crazier than this. Give us an opinion.
Well, I just want to clarify, they're semi-automatic rifles, not automatic rifles. And an assault weapon would be considered a military weapon that goes from semi-automatic to full automatic. And the reality is they look like military weapons, but they're not. They're not military-grade weapons. They do not have full automatic. Though on occasion, what happened in El Paso, apparently the young man there had a very large capacity magazine and was able to fire quite a few rounds. My thought is there's this kind of three levels of politics and emotion that go into this. And the first one is fear. People, an incident like these shootings, there's one at the Garlic Festival in Gilroy, California the week before, and then of course the El Paso and then the Dayton, all very rapid succession. And they are increasing. The number of young people that are taking up arms and killing people is scaring people, and it should. So fear.
Yep, I agree.
And then immediately somebody has to place blame. People want to find, they want blame. They want to know why. Why did this happen? And they're going to blame someone. And unfortunately, in a political season and the rhetoric that we have right now, the blame is the Democratic presidential candidates, and a large percentage of that particular leftist progressive group, they're blaming the president. They aren't taking a look at any of the issues that actually may be underlying and causing these things. And of course, they're not blaming the shooters much at all. And in fact, that's number one where blame lies. And the third issue, it goes from first to fear, then to blame, and then everybody wants a solution. And we want instant gratification. We want something that's going to solve the problem. But the reality is, it's a much deeper problem. And most of the legislative actions that have gone in the past when these types of things have happened.
Jimmy, that is the understatement of the day. It is a much more complex and serious problem. And I want everybody who listens to this program to think about that, because it's not going to get solved unless we think about how to solve it in a, number one, cohesive, and number two, I would have to use the word beneficial manner to everybody.
There are short-term political agendas that are attempting to motivate voters. And the assault weapons ban that happened during the 90s, it is factually incorrect to say that that helped. In fact, it did not. It did nothing, which is why the ban was let expire. The case of the bump stocks, banning bump stocks from the shooter from Las Vegas a couple of years ago, and that wacko, that's how many people have used bump stocks. And in fact, did he need a bump stock to be able to do what he did? No, he didn't. That was somewhat ridiculous, though. You know, all right, the administration put it out there. And now we're searching for these instant gratifications, immediate solutions. And they're actually, the fault first and foremost goes with the shooter, but then you've got to really look at why these things are happening at a like increased rate. And I think it has a lot to do with the actual media. I think it has a lot to do with the people that perpetuate this. So as a counterterrorism guy, one of the things that we're very concerned about, and what the reason why terrorism works, is because it creates fear. And the way it creates fear is by propaganda and by getting the media to present and to immediately jump on these problems and create that fear in the community. And there is no question that the media in this country just runs at these events and perpetuates and, you know, almost in an awkward way, idealizes these individuals. And it drives the problem even deeper. But there's more problems out there. You know, there's some serious problems with our youth and the disconnection they feel from each other, possibly because of social media, possibly because of a society that is politically correct, that really drives people to be alienated. And I'm very concerned about those types of things that really are going to take a deep look. We're going to have to take a very deep look to try to actually address those. And it's not going to happen anytime soon. It's not going to happen because of, you know, Mitch McConnell bringing a bill to the Senate floor. It's not going to happen because Schumer and Pelosi and AOC get their way. It's going to take a deep cultural change in our community and our society.
Well, I think the reason you're right 100% is the simple fact that we are all not left wing. We are all not right wing. If the left happens to take over the executive branch in the next election, which I certainly don't believe that they will, there would still be a very large percentage of people in the country who would be thoroughly, thoroughly angry. Okay, number one. Number two, if the conservatives maintain the executive branch and lose control of Congress, forget the checks. I mean, yeah, the checks and balances will be there, but nobody will be able to accomplish anything. People have to realize, Jimmy, whether it's people of our ilk or people of the other ilk, they're going to have to realize that maybe the other side has a point. You and I don't think the progressives have a point, but you know what? Things have gotten so bad. I certainly listen to what they have to say. I mean, the least I can do is listen and think about it. But there's so much venom in their messages, I lose interest very, very quickly because of the anger, man.
I agree, and it's irrational. And I tell you, from my perspective, this started in the Clinton campaign for president in 2016, in 2015. The DNC and the Clinton campaign decided that they were going to alienate Trump and paint him as a racist, a bigot, a fascist, and a misogynist. And I think it's really destructive.
And it's crazy because what I don't understand in something that we're going to talk about in the next segment after the commercial break is the fact that every one of those statements, not everyone, but certainly the majority of them, can be refuted, and they can be refuted with cold, hard facts. The thing I like about Trump, the reason I supported Trump from day one, is simply because I am a nationalist. I don't believe the country can afford to be anything but nationalistic. We simply have gone too far down economically to be anything but nationalistic. But that certainly doesn't mean that we have to not care about other people. Check out the commercial real quick, ladies and gentlemen. Jim McKinney and I will be back in a matter of 30 seconds.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back. You know, Jim, during the latter part of the last segment, I did most of the talking. Take the mic away from me, man. I'm getting too emotional. It's all yours, bud.
Well, we were talking about the DNC and the Clinton campaign in 2016 to paint Trump in a particular way. They did a very successful job in alienating a large percentage of the population, and they're doing a fantastic job of really developing the hate. And it's interesting because they continually argue that Trump and Republicans are the fascists, but in fact, they're the ones that are taking more control. And the way you look up at the definition of a fascist, they impound people through regulation, through restriction, through control, which is exactly what the Democratic Party wants. They want a larger government. President Trump has actually gone to the opposite, and he's taking away regulatory restrictions on the average American, on businesses, freeing up the economy, freeing up individual choice and freedoms. There's a price and a cost with that. But they move from that fascist argument to the racist argument, and they're painting him as a white nationalist, which is absolutely insane. Donald Trump used to hang out with Al Sharpton in New York. He used to hang out with Reverend Jesse Jackson. He supported their causes. Okay, so he went on Oprah Winfrey's show. He has done a tremendous amount to improve in a very short period of time, the lives of the black community in the United States. We've got the lowest unemployment rate in history for black Americans and Hispanic Americans. And that's the sign of a racist? Very inconsistent arguments, and incredibly hateful to continue to spew that, this white racism and this white nationalism. It's very interesting. I hear a lot of the left and the media pundits, certainly on cable news, talk about dog whistles from Trump and the Republicans. So the reality is the Democrats and the progressives, rapidly grab these very specific terminologies and they spread throughout all their media outlets and then begin to perpetuate that through their campaign letters, through their funding letters, through their all forms of media, and try to perpetuate that hate. And exactly what you were talking about, Al, people are getting so tired of listening to that. That's why Trump was elected, because they're tired of being told how to think and what to do. And he's standing up for them. And, you know, whether you like it or not and how he does it, that's why people support him. And they're tired of being told how to think and what to do, and tired of being controlled. But that's what the left is trying very hard to do.
100%. 100%. It may be very hard to do, but they have certainly polarized the country. There's no question about that. What I can't understand is it seems relatively easy to blow holes in the argument that Trump is a racist, Trump hates black people, etc., etc. I take a magazine called The Week, and it was rather interesting, the article they did on this whole situation in Baltimore. And the magazine, unfortunately, was a bit critical of Trump for calling it like it is. It's a rat-infested, terrible place to live, and they were a bit offended by that. But the fact of the matter is, if you fact-check where Donald Trump's heart is, you talk about his relationship with Jesse Jackson, who has given him awards. Jesse has given awards to Donald. You talk about the relationship between Al Sharpton and Donald Trump. It was up until the election, the results of the election were in. They had a great relationship. Donald Trump has been lauded many times in the past for being a non-racist. All of these facts are absolutely verifiable. Why doesn't somebody do it other than Big Al and Jim McKinney?
Well, you know, there's people out there struggling to try to do it, but the reality is corporate media, the, you know, AT&T's that run CNN now, the Microsoft Network and NBC, Andy Lack, CNN, the CBS, you name the major media outlets, that for some reason they live in this bubble inside these urban, dense urban population areas that are very progressive, and they don't listen to the rest of the country, and they aren't willing to accept it. And it's a political agenda. It's a political effort. And the most scary part of it is the big tech companies and the big organ, Facebook, Twitter, Google, Alphabet, they're actually attempting to suppress the voices that come up and ask these questions. I don't know if, you know, maybe your listeners are paying attention to this, but Mitch McConnell's campaign team Mitch published video of people standing outside of his house the other night, two nights ago, asking for him to be killed. And they just posted those on Twitter. Twitter shut down Team Mitch's Twitter feed. He's just showing the truth. And they're afraid of the truth. And that's what the big tech is doing. And that's what the media outlets are doing. They're actually suppressing the views. And my personal belief is because most of the media markets are centered around these dense urban areas, Los Angeles, Chicago, New York, Boston, Washington, D.C. And the people there look at the world much differently than the rest of America. So, I think it's very frightening that there's that much control. That's that. Ultimately, how we make our decisions is based on what information we have. And if our information is all controlled by people that are actually against this administration for numerous reasons, most importantly, because of the fear of actually losing global markets and their, you know, financial expansion capabilities because of, you know, protecting American interests over international and global interests, I think it's a very frightening scenario right now.
Oh, it's absolutely terrifying. I'm just looking up on Google right now, was Mitch McConnell's life ever threatened? Yeah, here it is, believe it or not. Protesters outside Mitch McConnell's house stab the mother, you know what. Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, there's all kinds of it. And Twitter closed that down. They closed down his Twitter feed when he was just trying to show what the anger is on the opposite side. We've seen this in restaurants. We've seen this by Maxine Waters standing up and telling, you know, her constituents to scream at people and attack them. We've got Castro's brother, the congressman in Texas, putting out donors to the Trump campaign with veiled, you know, innuendo to go ahead and, you know, intimidate them. We've got it locally. We have it here in our community where the left has threatened businesses to shut them down over support for oil industry, which is our largest job, folks.
Jimmy,
around here.
We know what's going on. We got to take a top of the hour break for the news. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to be right back with Jim McKinney.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Welcome in here to wrap up the last two segments of KER Politics. I have both Jim McKinney and Chris Temple on the line with me right now. We're going to discuss in, I think, pretty specific terms, a very broad subject, and that is, where are the Democrats going? Where exactly is the Democrats' philosophy today? There seems to be some real confusion about that. Jimmy, you want to start?
Sure. I think it's good to have Chris on the line here, and Al, appreciate the opportunity to go on this. I think there's an interesting dynamic that's happening right now with the left, with the Democrats, in this push to the left in order to mobilize voters in the primary that are probably very much to one very particular side, and everyone's reaching and grabbing the very progressive policies, open borders, environmental policy, free college tuition, very large government. I think it's very interesting where there's very little position in the middle for anybody, as we see even the front runner Joe Biden moving even more towards the progressive side. What do you think about that, Chris?
Well, I'll tell you, I was looking this afternoon at some articles, and one of the things that struck me about an interview I saw with John Hickenlooper from Colorado, who of course is one of the 9,413 declared Democrat candidates for president, is that there's rumors he's going to drop out of the race and run for the Senate. But one of the things that led to that was an interesting piece in the New York Times. And the title of this article, guys, was The Extraordinary Humbling of John Hickenlooper. And here is a guy who probably is one of the best reasoned and most responsible and most centrist of the candidates for the Democrat Party. And they're making mincemeat out of this guy. You know, he's not wacko enough. And, you know, the Democrats run the risk. And he said this when he was interviewed by Herbert Hoover's great-granddaughter on the modern-day manifestation of Firing Line on PBS. He used the analogy I did with you guys when we were talking earlier, that the Democrat Party is going to do now what it did in 1972 and figure out that a way that they can run against and defeat a Republican candidate who they hate is to find somebody as far away from him as humanly possible. And at least in the context of those days, George McGovern was about the most liberal candidate they could find, and he won one state. So we'll see if the same thing happens this time. But it's sad that in order to appease the establishment and the news media in Hollywood, that the Democrat Party has turned into more of a freak show, and it's not even, in my opinion, any longer a viable opposition party.
No, I agree. I don't think that's very positive for the nation myself. I think that it's very much more valuable to have an opposition that is actually relevant and that talks to the people in the middle, at least to ensure that we have some sort of a balance. But right now, it's crazy the far extremes that some of these people are talking about without, you know, open borders, the New Green Deal, which is basically retaking, according to Saikat Chakrabarty, the Justice Democrats leader and AOC's chief of staff, who just left, said that, hey, the New Green Deal is really not about the environment. It's about controlling economy and turning the economy into something different. His view is a better way, but the reality is there's a big effort and a strong move to the left to appease a very small group of people, I think, that live in a Twitter world that are really not that very educated on what the issues are out there. And I think it's unfortunate. People don't pay much attention to the real impact on their lives with some of these policies.
Well, let me throw this out at you, because I think the Democrats are totally going in the wrong direction right now. And I say this because of two very, very interesting things that are going on that are totally supported by the numbers. Number one, the median wage in the United States right now, median salary, is about $60,000 a year. Specifically, it's about $59,900. Okay, the other thing that I think is very interesting is that the Democrats are going after folks who are on welfare, for lack of better terms, and the African-American community. Well, what's going against them in both of those areas is that the number of people who are considered to be at the poverty level, that percentage of the population has gone way, way down compared to where it was prior to Trump. It's about 13% today. And we all know that in terms of African-American unemployment, that number has shrunk dramatically since Trump took office in January of 2017. I think they really have their wires crossed, guys, and by they, I mean the Democrats. Any comments on that? Chris, how about you?
Well, look, the Democrats are running against Donald Trump because they hate him with a passion. They Correct. Still have not gotten over the fact that he's president in the first place. The Hilda Beast hates him. Everybody else does. And this is personal, and it's so personal and so based on just a visceral hatred they have for this guy that's one of the several reasons, frankly, in my opinion, guys, why they're really not a legitimate opposition party right now. It's all noise and hatred and spit and venom. Problem number one for the Democrat Party is that they are themselves compromised. Don't ever forget that the two of them, like George Wallace said, in the end, when you look at the quarters of power, there's not a dime's worth of difference between the establishments of the both parties. The Democrat Party has, by and large, with some exceptions individually, of course, like with the Republicans, they've supported the U.S. trying to be the world empire and world conqueror and having a bloated defense budget. And one of the things that Donald Trump, in my opinion, would be extraordinarily vulnerable on is his 180-degree flip from what candidate Trump said about foreign policy. Now you got a guy that brags about record defense budgets and all the rest of this stuff. But who can run against that? I mean, Bernie Sanders, maybe, Elizabeth Warren, sort of. Almost everybody else, and certainly the hierarchy of the Democrat Party on Capitol Hill, they all endorse this stuff. Same thing with Wall Street. Same thing with the Federal Reserve. I'll tell you, when it comes to the AOCs, and she's just an idiot. She's not cunningly deceptive like a Chuck Schumer or Nancy Pelosi or someone like that. She and Bernie Sanders and some of the rest of these people, they're starry-eyed idealists who again, if they are not going to go after the Federal Reserve as an institution and properly understand and properly explain social credit and modern monetary theory the way I at least understand it, they'll never get anywhere, because that's another area where they could trump.
Comment, Jimmy. And keep
knew what they were talking about and weren't part of the problem themselves.
Okay.
Got about a minute left. Yeah.
Got a minute and a half to wrap this up.
Well, I agree. They are uneducated and incapable of actually running against him in those areas. What I think is more interesting is the fact that they created an evil myth through tremendous support from the media and the tech world that have basically painted Trump as some sort of lunatic, rightist, fascist, racist. And now they've doubled down on it so much that they can't back off of it, because if they back off of it, they're going to lose complete credibility, which they've pretty much done for the mainstream America. And I think it's putting them in a very, very difficult situation. If they did have any educated ideas, if they did have any policies, without the fallacies and the actual falsehoods that they are basing them on, yeah, there would be a possibility. But that's actually, at this point, it's impossible, because they've created these myths and they've created, and it just goes on and on.
And it does go on and on, Jimmy. We're going to talk about this in the next segment. We're going to talk about the conception, true or not true, of is the Democratic Party socialistic? Ladies and gentlemen, stick around. Right back. Okay, here to wrap up KER Politics with Jim McKinney and Mr. T. Chris Temple. By the way, anybody who has not taken advantage of Chris's newsletter, The National Investor, really, in my opinion, is an imbecile. It's the best newsletter out there, both on financial issues, investing issues, and certainly political issues. Chris, I'm going to ask you this question first, and then you can just, you know, flip it over to Jim and let him weigh in on it. But there are a lot of Democrats who I know socially who basically their ire just comes shooting out of them when you say, well, the Democrats are really going in a socialist direction. And they just scream back, no, they're not. What's your opinion on that, Mr. T?
Well, look, I think that, you know, a lot of conservatives tend to just indiscriminately throw the word socialist at liberals, just like liberals like to throw the words fascist or racist or whatever at conservatives. It's a sign, among other things, in my opinion, of intellectual laziness and weakness and an inability to debate issues. So I look at things different than most do, as you might know or recall. I was up to my eyeballs once upon a time in Republican Party politics, and a good loyal foot soldier for various organizations and a couple of, and long since came to the conclusions that both parties, when you look at their propaganda, are full of more crap than a Christmas goose more often than not. To me, socialism, it has a different meaning than it does for most. As a Christian, and with my philosophy, I'm an advocate of what the Catholic Church has long taught as the third way. It's not capitalism or socialism, as those things are understood. And what irks me is that I hear a lot of my Republican friends harangue the Democrats as socialists, yet they have no problem with now a nearly $800 billion budget deficit, so we can see how much more of the world we can screw up than what we've done already. I don't like the idea of a lot of the subsidies that different industries have that are for no purpose other than profit for capitalists, because I also distinguish between capitalism, which is bad, and free enterprise, which is good. So are the Democrats too far in the direction of wanting to give everybody everything for free? Of course they are. And it makes no economic sense, at least until, as I suggested on the last segment, they learn about social credit and the proper advocacy of modern monetary theory. And I'll tell you, I would vote for Bernie Sanders tomorrow if he came right out and said, to make everything work and to really treat society and all of our people right, I'm going to go for the abolition of the Fed. If he did that, he'd have my vote.
Well, I'll comment back where I think that your points, Chris, are very strong and positive, or good, I should say, not positive, but good on the point that the parties, when you get into the party politics, it does get pretty ugly, and it disconnects people because they really look at the average people and they look at folks as a tool in order to achieve their broader goals, and they get very focused inside that beltway and how things operate, and it's very difficult for them to break with the past patterns, because that's the way things work. It's very difficult to break that up. I will say that this administration is the biggest threat to that environment, and the current administration, and I think there's this big push is from the left is to like rein back in the control from the average people, the people that are out there that were frustrated and being told how to think and what to do and how they were going to do their economy and how they were going to buy. And I think there's that frustration is incredibly, it is in spite of over 90% of the media negative reporting against the administration, in spite of the actual Republican Party not supporting this President Trump or candidate Trump, in spite of all those factors, a whole bunch of people in the United States stood up and said, we're tired of that. And I think it's the biggest threat. Now, your point on defense spending, this is, and a lot of the listeners out there are very frustrated with me on that side. But I believe that building relationships and building allies actually reduces the long-term burden of defense. And that, in fact, it's a valuable and very important in our world to protect our system. And I believe in our system. I believe in our Constitution more than anything else. And it is actually has brought mankind to the heights that it has become in a very rapid period of time. No time in history have we made these many advances and done so well. And that's based on those fundamental principles that are outlined there in our Constitution. So defending that against Chinese autocracy, against Russian oligarchy and kleptocracy, against a lot of people that would actually like to control those markets for global interests and financial interests, I think that's a pretty important thing to do. I think it's, where we spend our money, the one thing that we have to do more than anything else, in my particular view, is defend this nation and that Constitution. That's my take on it.
Mr. T.
Well, defending this nation, in my opinion, does not involve the fact that we spent trillions of dollars and cost many, many lives around the world by destabilizing the Middle East, for example. I do not in any way, shape, or form count that as defending this nation or our principles.
I've fought there, but I'm not saying that was actually in the best interest of the United States as well. I'm not making that argument. But I do believe there are threats, and I think it'd be ignorant to think that the fastest growing economy in the world, even at 6% growth in China, with the largest population and demographics, that you're going to have to face that at some point when they are controlled by approximately 200 people. And they'll make decisions in the interests of those 200 people, not of the 1.4, 1.5 billion, or the rest of the world in their economic interests or in their power interests. And that's something that we need to be very concerned about.
Well, on China, I am. And for those that listen to KE Report on a regular basis, I have had an extraordinary amount to say about China recently. And I've even tried to get a rise out of our friend Al here on, because there are some, epical things taking place right now where China's concerned. And that is one area where even though the president's understanding of the currency role and everything in this leaves an awful lot to be desired, he is 100% correct in going after China as a strategic competitor.
Long-term competitor, yes.
Yeah, and you know, the way in which they've been allowed to game the Western system of democratic capitalism for 25 years should never have been allowed in the first place.
No, we subsidized it. We subsidized their growth.
But what frosts me, though, and it seems like this is a never-ending cycle, is that just like it was this country and Wall Street and U.S. corporate and defense interests that initially built the Soviet Union so that we had them to be an enemy for years, by the same token, we are largely responsible for China having had to start to become the power it is now. And now they want to run things on their own name, and some of the people that helped them do it say, oh, no, you're not going to do that. And now we have this fight. So I agree that we need to consider China as the number one danger to this country right now long term. In fact, I found it humorous talking about how the Democrats have such goofy Trump derangement syndrome that when one of the I think it was Navarro or somebody, I forget right now who it was, that was testifying in the Senate about the dangers in the world, some of the Democrats were crestfallen that they were told that it was actually China that is a far greater danger. It was Chris Wray of the FBI director, I remember now.
Yeah.
He was talking about 1,000 open cases of industrial espionage, cyber terror, and whatnot. Every single one of them involves China, not Russia. And this is for the Democrats who keep trying to keep this fantasy going. The Russians are coming.
Yeah. So.
50 seconds, you guys.
Well, I agree with you there that the fact I was a Russian foreign area officer. I've studied and spent many, many, many years both working and operating in the area, but paying much attention to it. And, Russians are problematic. The Chinese are a serious threat to global domination in the future, and they will dictate terms. They will dictate terms if we do not protect Western ideologies and Western policies. And that I would like to avoid as being our future, because they're controlling everything in individual thoughts, and it's frightening to me.
You know, Anatoly, I really appreciate the conversation between you two guys. This was a great way to wrap up KER Politics. I want to do this more often, and we'll talk about that off mic.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.